So yes, first of all, you heard it right. That was Yona. I am Nona. We've had a lot of fun with that. And thank you for tackling the language taxonomy. It's a daunting task, and appreciate you doing that. What we have on stage here is, for the first time ever, four of the major vendors in the IPM intellectual property management space. Very excited to be working with these guys on this panel and over the years. I'll let everyone introduce themselves. We're going to go through a little bit of conversation around the different products that these gentlemen represent, what they're actually putting together from a development perspective to help our industry, and other things that maybe they have people asking for. I think it's really unprecedented to have this level of brain power up here on stage. So you guys are, I think you're ready to go. Guy Finley, wherever you went off to, you may want to stand close just in case you need to get all Jerry Springer and separate these guys. But let's start with some introductions. Thomas?
Hi, my name is Thomas Dilling, and metadata and rights are sexy, of course. I work as head of product for MediaMorph, and prior to that worked at Fox and KPMG for a variety of clients, both in broadcast here on the West Coast, where thank God it's not snowing, and also on the East Coast.
Hi, I'm Tom Anthony. I work for Vistex. I've been with Vistex for about 4 years now, but I've been working in rights and rights management and complex settlements, working for various software companies over the years, with a very large, or with a variety of media companies and other intellectual property management type companies over the years, and I've been doing that since like the late 80s or something. So, I really have a passion for this domain, for managing rights, and that's me.
I like your hat.
Thank you. You like the shoes?
I noticed they match, yeah. Pardon me, I'm Jason Kasson. I'm the CEO and co-founder of FilmTrack. Prior to that, I was a child, FilmTrack focuses on rights management, royalties and participations, financial management related to the contracts.
So you didn't live through the green screen days?
I did, but okay. I've been writing software since 1980, Vax VMS was my scene.
Good morning, guys. Shiv Sehgal, I'm the Chief Product Officer at RSG. I've been with RSG for 8 years, started on the rights side, and more recently I've been focused on the analytics side, heading up our RSG audience analytics platform, and a little bit about RSG and what we're doing and where I believe the industry is going. I really believe we're in a revenue stream revolution where there's all these ways to monetize content now. And from a rights perspective, that's the really exciting aspect of things. We could really look at things from a financial portfolio type of viewpoint and see how all the different ways we can monetize that asset and what makes best sense. And I'm one of the believers that content is king and the future of television is more television. So I hope that gives you guys a little bit of background on what we do. We'll be have products on the right side, managing the content and IP inventory, managing the advertising and marketing inventories as well.
All right, so let's talk about some of the technologies that are out there. I mean, we hear a lot about robot process automation or RPA. We hear a lot about machine learning and AI, and we'll get into that a little bit. We talk a lot about predictive analytics and even blockchain. These are all kind of the media buzzwords.
Media buzzwords.
Buzzword bingo. So we don't have play cards for you, but you can keep track of the different words that we're using while we're up here. But one of the things is, we all know that we're starting to integrate this into our daily lives. Our home is an Amazon home. I know there's Google devices out there, all the different things that can tell me that since I have this hat, I need to buy these shoes, right? But that type of technology has not really taken hold in a lot of our B2B transactions. And one of the challenges I pose to these guys is, before we get into the future of smart rights and what we can do with the technology, why hasn't it taken hold? Why are we not saying, Alexa, what can I license in Germany?
Oh, I love that. If I could go home and say, Alexa, what kind of license can we do? That would be amazing. It would also mean that she's broken through all of my protections and like secure hard drives and clouds, but that's okay. I think so, to that point, I actually think there's a historical piece, and I think there's a little bit of momentum from how rights used to be conceived, and that's what's holding us back now. If you think about all the paper trail and in 1980 and 1984, and if there's any millennials in here, I don't think you were born then, but if you think about the paper trail of contracts that's been going on, there's always been been rights. You've always had rights for products to capture concepts and to capture products that are out there. And the challenge is how we work with them still stays the same, as though we're still treating on paper. And we're looking through very specific sort of use cases, and it hasn't really evolved yet to the land where you're going from concept to contract, and you're going from contract to cash. And at the end of the day, the reason that you want to exploit and monetize your rights is in a way that allows you to do that. And I still think we're held up by some of the old mindset from even the paper days from not that long ago.
So a culture thing in addition to a technology thing.
We were discussing that the other day. I think it's a cultural challenge, as a lot of our challenges are in our industry. And I'm not saying it's old guard or new guard. It's just conceptually how things have always been perceived. And again, there are many who look at what we do and they say, well, it's not even rights. It's contracts. Contracts are an aggregate of a relationship between a licensee and licensor that codifies rights, financials, dates, all sorts of interrelated activity that one might argue is somewhat curated, and it's not easily analyzed by an AI or something like that. But we're seeing major improvements. I think, you know, I mentioned, you know, robot entry is an area we're seeing massive improvements where you can get some standardized entries on some of these deals and enter them through robotics. And that's for all of us. I think one of the biggest challenges of our systems is getting data in, getting data out. Getting data in, if we can automate that using cool techniques and also adhering to the way and the direction the industry is going, well, we can modify our systems accordingly.
Yeah, just to echo what Jason and Thomas were saying, let me just first say, I think rights is sexy, right?
Yeah.
And we need to make it sexy.
Don't forget the metadata.
I feel this old adage that there's compliance aspect to rights and there's an operational aspect to rights. On the network side, for example, it's how you window content, and you're talking about integrations with different systems to automate the windowing. On the MSO and VPD side, it's, you know, making sure that the subscribers have the right access to content based off how their that mode of distribution. On the studio side, it's what's available and kind of doing all those calculations, but it's operational in nature. And how do we make something show the business strategy side to things and not just be overwhelmed by the operational activities because, I mean, it's no surprises, the industry is kind of consolidating. You have all these issues in terms of having one ecosystem to do all these things.
Well, let's pull it back to what you're saying about operational. You know, start there because that's a very basic, it's not a simple concept, but it's a very basic concept. And how RPA might help with data entry, data cleansing, pushing the data where it needs to be. Is that something that you see?
Yeah, we have customers doing that now very successfully. This is where, let's say you don't have the sophistication to write, you know, all of us have APIs and things like that where you can automate entry into the system and various ingest tools, but if you really are trying to automate what a human does, in other words, look at a document or at a grid of data and rekey it into a UI with some knowledge, there are a lot of great tools out there that'll do that for you with any of our UIs, you know, there's some level of accuracy in there, but if it can be automated, and I'm seeing massive parallel processing here where you can have effectively dozens of data entry people, which are effectively robots, although they don't, you know, they're just software, but that...
Did you just say people are robots?
People are robots. I mean, everything is an illusion, but that's another thing. It's Kierkegaard. We'll talk about that later. But in theory, you could get a lot of data entry in if it's normalized. And again, there's a lot of curated data that's going to be difficult to do, but that may be a pre-process that a human can put it together in a way that can a robot can consume. But by the way, the robots learn, and they understand, okay, I kept putting this in this field. It actually belongs in that field. I'll know better next time.
That brings us into the kind of the next concept around machine learning. So we can train these models. We can teach them to do what we want them to do. We can teach them to do repeatable tasks and maybe even things that are slight variations on those repeatable tasks. It sounds like that might be, machine learning might be someplace.
Yeah, I think that for us in particular, we're focusing a lot on machine learning. We're focusing both on the operational side as well as on the strategic side. I mean, we're looking certainly on the data, the data management side, and learning about how to manage data, how to augment it, how to transform it as it comes into the system, so that a user isn't having to change every little piece to manage that data coming in. We're also looking on the analytics side. You know, how can we make analytics smarter? How can we make analytics more predictive, more prescriptive, going forward. So that's, you know, so I think those are the two big areas that we're looking at, are both the operational side as well as the strategic side.
And just a thought from what we said earlier, between all the acquisitions and the mergers and all the activity in the industry, you were looking at so many different sets of rights and metadata. It's really exciting if you like working with dirty data. But before you can run on AI and machine learning, you really have to have a data foundation. And you have to work to align and normalize the data that you do have, or else all the analytics and everything else just won't be able to grab the hooks it needs in order to extract that data that you're looking for.
I mean, or it grabs the wrong hooks.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think for all of us, I mean, when we look at our implementation plans with a given customer or something like that, the largest part of that implementation plan isn't doing sexy VA. It's getting the data in and cleaning the data. And that is the literally, it's like if it were a Gantt chart, it's that part and then everything else is here. It is so difficult. And so having clean data, having methods to accelerate that data cleansing to get that data, and then you can get to all this cool stuff about emergent properties of the data that you might not otherwise see, but you need to have it in a very... as clean as possible, and that's what we're excited about.
Right. And you've got to have lots of data. You've got to have very diverse data, and it's got to be organized. And once you've laid that foundation, then you can start getting into analytics and predictive analytics and all the other stuff that comes with that.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there, because I don't think that we can ever get to a point where we're going to be completely organized. I think it is important to categorize the data. I think it's important to potentially get it in the same place, or at least be able to access it from the same place, so you have a single pane of glass that you're looking through. But I think if we wait for all our data to be organized, it's going to be...
It will always be a challenge.
Yeah.
I think that you're going to be more, the more you can organize it, the more successful and the better the results I think you'll be able to get, as close as you can get.
Right. Yeah, because what Shiv was saying I think is important is that the data that we store on behalf of our customers or help them organize is really there. It's a monetization play. It's like, we get asked a lot, what is my library worth? What will I be having in the future? What will I make in the future? Which is an aggregate of what outstanding AR I have to date, what availabilities I have based on those availabilities, what should I expect to be able to license, what should I be able to get for those licenses. That totally tells me how much I can go get a loan from Chase or Citibank, because that's my terminal value. So this has real implication. It's not just about rights and usage and compliance. It's what is my content worth, what will it be worth, and how can I leverage?
Yeah, and beware of the concept of rights or data orphans. These are the pockets and the silos that bring tears to your eye that never see the light of day. I think that the other challenge from historical culture is that you think people may think of rights as its own little silo, it's its own bucket, but actually it's a continuity. It's down the entire content value management chain, it's down to the product, it's down to the end consumer. Rights that live in silos that do not see the light are just sad rights.
And we don't want sad rights, that's for sure. All right, so let's step into a little bit more sophistication around artificial intelligence, or what I prefer to call artificial intuition. And I think that's a really big distinction between, you know, people tend to use machine learning and AI interchangeably, and they're really not. You know, as long as you know what you're talking about with the person you're conversing with, that's one thing. But once we get into AI, then from my perspective, it's more, what can it tell me that I don't even know I want to know? So if I'm running through and I'm doing image recognition on a bunch of photos, and there's different Batman, you know, do I want to know that there's 20 different Batman, or do I just want the 15 that are still potentially viable for the next release, maybe to have a cameo or something like that? And so it's kind of adding that additional layer of intuition that I think is going to become really interesting and important. The question is, from a rights perspective, what are y'all doing about it?
Sure. So... what we're doing on specifically on the audience side, and there's harmony across all of our products. For example, when we're forecasting TV schedules, we're looking at the avails, and we're saying, all right, we need to tie the historic Nielsen data to start to be able to forecast the future. And what we're doing on specifically the machine learning side is just, number one, forget the AI stuff. And by the way, I'm just going to give some quick background. The whole machine learning aspect, we're pretty much taking techniques that have been around since the 1900s, like regression analysis, and just doing it on a computer. So there's nothing crazy happening, and I just want to first demystify that, you know, there's not these, you know, just crazy scientists pressing buttons. Right? There's mathematical formulas that have been around for hundreds of years.
We're just doing it at scale now.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing it at scale, and we can now understand what's important to a network, or in terms of your inventory, what are the attributes that are important, for example, romance and adventures. And at kids' content, we're seeing that there's a high affinity towards that content for people who are heavy movie viewers in the Nielsen sample. And those people are typically females, people 18 to skewing a little older, 18 to 30, people 39 to 43 who are African American. So we're taking all this information and now we're packaging it very nicely to provide nudges, like you're saying, AI. We just need to provide people access to information, and that's kind of what we're talking about earlier in the beginning, too. It's just unlocking data and making it available and packaging it to certain people, whether you're on the operational side, the business side, or the strategic side.
And how do the rights management systems figure into that? I agree with you from an audience perspective.
From a rights management standpoint, I really believe that's just your central repository of just everything you got, right? So it starts off with, what do we got? Right, and I won't steal any more time from everybody, but that's my perspective.
I agree. I think it's also how and it tells you where you've licensed in, where you've licensed out, right? So you have all the data of who's licensing what where, and you have all the product information associated with that. So you can get a lot of emergent data about that. You can say, wow, Germany licenses a lot of horror films of this era, of this thing, and you can make, and again, it's not B2C stuff, this is B2B stuff, that is obviously informed further down the chain by the consumer, but you can get a lot of analytics around and start to get some, as you said, like not quite machine, not T1000 coming in and telling you, license this to, you know, it's you can start seeing where, when you have enough data, as some of these right smarts do, you can start seeing where your content should be licensed, what you should be expecting to get for it, and how you should construct the deals also. Because you can look at a deal and look at the minimum guarantee and the consumption against that guarantee to see if your estimates are actually accurate. Because you may be licensing a ton of stuff, but not making a dime. So you have to look at that.
And just to pivot a little bit and talk about, when do you get calls at 2 in the morning? No one calls you at 2 in the morning because you scraped incremental revenue out of Switzerland. They call you because you, by accident, licensed a title to a territory in a language that isn't supposed to be there, and the director happened to see it in his hotel room. Not a real story from a prior employer, no. So if you think about that, part of what we're talking about with the centralized and the data and the foundation, just to go back to where you really need to start and before you build up into the algorithms and the machine learning and the AI, you've got to have that solid foundation. And it's absolutely to monetize, but it's also, in one sense, to defend and do correct.
Yeah, and just on top of that, I really believe that it's kind of mind-boggling that just to get data, right, just to get clean, robust data is so difficult in our industry. Mm-hmm. Just on the cross-platform side, on the metadata side, I mean, how many companies invest in additional metadata providers just to get that extra character or whatever? You know, it's really difficult for us as an industry to move forward when we're kind of bogged down by just step one, right? And from my perspective and from RSG, we don't want to be pushing the AI and machine learning stuff if we can't get to step one. And I think that culturally, as a community, it's really our obligation to drive what's first, most important, that foundational piece, right? That underlying data layer.
So, I mean, we have large... the only thing I wanted to bring up was the fact we have large sets of data in multiple domains, right? We have lots of financial data around sales and contracts and royalties and fees and all that stuff. And then we have lots of data around the rights management, you know, what rights are available. Our inventory, that's our inventory, right? And what all those little pieces are. We've also got to look at putting all that together. I think, as someone else mentioned, we've got to be able to tie the financial stuff, all that financial data to the rights data and figure out where the value is and figure out what's worth going after or paying attention to and what's not. And so that data has to be all put together too, and that's going to take up some work.
Yeah, and then even, you know, as our industry changes and grows and we buy and sell each other as companies, then, you know, library valuations, company valuations, all of those things can come into play once we have that better connected information. And I think, Jason, I think it was you that coined the term informed financials the other day. Mm-hmm. And so we can use this information to really help drive some of the decisions around what we're doing, what we're selling, and even potentially what we're buying. So it's a really exciting time, as every day is in entertainment. That's why we all stay in it. So let's jump on then a little bit more into the future type stuff. So if you were to pick one technology that you were going to double down on for the next 2 to 3 years, what would it be?
analytics. I mean, that's where we're focusing our time. We're focusing a lot of time on our analytics engine, we've had a strong descriptive analytics sort of capability for a while now, and now we're rolling out the more predictive analytics. And then I think the next thing to look at is prescriptive. Tell me what to do, mm-hmm. right? So that's kind of where we're, you know, we've addressed machine learning, you know, brought machine learning into certain parts of our application, and that's great, you know, very operational in a lot of ways. But kind of the analytics is where we're kind of excited about going and continuing to spend effort on.
I don't know, for 2 to 3 years, like when, as soon as you asked that question, I was thinking, well, you want to say blockchain, but no, maybe not in 2 or 3 years, it depends, because it's such a tricky situation. I think for the next 2 to 3 years, it's about shoveling snow. And so I'm going to disagree and say it's not about the shiny new toy. The mayor of Chicago doesn't get fired because he didn't build another park. He gets fired because he doesn't shovel snow. And I think we as collective in the ecosystem have to realize that the next 2 or 3 years are about the mergers, the acquisitions, really coming up with exploitation of rights, and setting the cultural foundation so that when machine learning and AI can be useful, we're okay to let it go. Right now, one of the stops that always hinders things is that there's always this desire to touch and manually intervene everything. If you have 120,000 right strands going out into the universe, you don't get to touch them. You have to set the rules, set that foundation, and then move forward. But I like analytics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like any technology that gets it easier to get data into a system. And by that, I mean whether it's machine learning, AI, robotics, ingest tools, fancy use of the APIs that weren't contemplated before. Because if you think about it, we're ingesting in contracts, which are important, which define all these things, and getting those in quickly are vital, particularly if you're standing up a system for the first time or moving from another system. You may not have the luxury of ingesting. You may have to enter, you know, 20,000 contracts by hand. And there are services and folks and people out here who do that, but you have to think about that. And then, as you're operating, you're getting reports in from distributors around the world, you're getting these royalty reports, and then you're sending out participation reports, and all of this data has to flow pretty seamlessly in order for you to get paid and for you to make payments. And that, in order for that to happen, you have to have a slick way of getting that royalty or performance data, statement data into your system, and a slick way of indicating who, unless you don't want to pay people, you know, who you owe money to. So I think any technology that supports that, which again, I think there's robotics, I think there's cool ingest tools, and there may be machine-to-machine stuff, which we're excited about. So, you know, if you're working with systems that can talk to each other through API or through any other technique, whether it's one of our systems talking to another one of our systems or one of the other folks here, or talking directly to your GL system to indicate a payment is due, those where I think our efficiencies are occurred, because I think a lot of places right now, those are not connected, and they need to be.
I got two answers, one joke one real one. The technology we should be investing in is creative intelligence. Anyone know what that is? That's us. Right. And forget artificial, forget machine learning. We should, you know, it's really
go
people
for some
that make
human
stuff.
Intelligence. Oh,
so exactly. Yeah. So that I actually really do believe that, because there's the merging between you know, arts and sciences, and the real answer that I have, we're heavily investing in Databricks. And there's one core question that we are answering, right? As there's more data, right? More demand for data, right? More demand for deeper analytics. How do we get access to information in real time? And I feel that that question is still, you know, left open. And that's why we're leveraging Databricks, not just to do all that ETL stuff that's been around for years, the fuzzy matching and leveraging new techniques to fusing data sources together. And, you know, I could go through, you know, a nuance kind of what we're doing, but it's just, I feel that that's the starting point.
Well, and I think that comes back around to, you know, let's shovel snow, let's do step one, is how do we get this data talking to each other? How do we get it, again, maybe in the same place, maybe not, but how do we get it universally accessible? And until we're there, it's still going to continue to be a pretty pretty big problem. But it's interesting that none of you guys said that you're betting on blockchain. That's really, like, you see the path and you know where we're going. And we hear the example of blockchain being used to track a diamond and its origin. And I think most people have seen that story. If not, let me know and I can send you a link to it. The other thing that comes up is smart contracts. We're built on contracts. Entertainment is, you know, all about the contracts, but yet I have yet to hear anyone have a solid path or at least a solid vision to say, okay, how are we going to implement this for 120,000, 40,000 contracts, however many we have in our systems? Will blockchain work for us?
So,
yeah.
Sorry. I mean, I disagree with, there are some folks at my own company who disagree with me. And I think we're many years away from it working, and not, again, because of a technical challenge, I think from a cultural challenge, and again, for the nuance and the curation that occurs in drafting these agreements and the complexity, and even for the, you know, the big VOD parties who take your entire library at once, there's still nuance in that. And so it's a challenge to codify that in a meaningful kind of blockchain that can have all the dimensions you need, and you know, it's exclusive except in Puerto Rico, Spanish, it's non-exclusive, but only for the 6-month window, and my royalty rate is different there, and the VODs, it's really hard to codify that period, which is why systems like this exist, but yeah. It's doubly hard to try to encode that in a blockchain.
Yeah. And you need that scalability, because at the end of the game, you are trying to get to the consumer. You need to be able to scale. You need to be very flexible. And I think if you look at the contracts that exist between a lot of the players, there are contracts that go for 25 years where they've never unpacked them. They just keep amending them. You're on Amendment 47 granting rights in Tunisia. You're on Amendment 49 granting English rights. Like, click, click, click. I think it's that flexibility, that scalability. You really got to be conceptual about it, and blockchain, to your point, hasn't quite gotten there yet to show it can be that scalable to get to that connected consumer.
And we're kind of in the same position where we're looking at blockchain. Certainly, I mean, it's an interesting technology, but you know, we're concerned about scalability. We're, you know, it's something that might prove out and might prove valuable, but we're not there yet. We haven't been convinced yet. That's kind of where we are.
I really want to disagree with you guys because you're competitors, but you guys are all right. You know, I have the same perspective, and forget about the blockchain stuff. I just have a question. Like, in order for blockchain to really, you know, even come into the question, let's just take an output agreement. Can we actually say that we're going to stop doing output agreements, which are these long-term agreements, and just have guarantee-based deals? Right, short, very quick deals to say that for this asset, we're going to guarantee XYZ, one and done, and we're going to change the way contracts are done. Because I feel like culturally, like we're saying, if we can actually change the dynamics and how we're doing these deals, then the opportunity for these technologies to kind of have this marketplace and all of this, monetizing each and every asset, that opens the door. But if we still are having the same way of kind of doing business, then that, you know,
yeah, the deal structure.
That puts us in an interesting position, kind of a rock and a hard place, because if we're saying that blockchain is not going to be necessarily a revolutionary technology for our industry in the next 2 to 5 years, but we potentially want to get to the place of a global, seamless marketplace for rights transactions, how do we get there?
We have to stop thinking, well, I think we're trapped by two-dimensional thinking. So, for anyone who likes Star Trek and anyone from Paramount, that great line about, you know, he's inexperienced, but he has two-dimensional thinking. I think in the rights field, we're confronted with not looking at three-dimensional models. And I think maybe there is a halfway point between where you can have smart contracts and not have blockchain, because you are looking through the different dimensions and the different lenses, and you need the systems to be able to support that.
Well, we do have some online marketplaces. Full disclosure, I'm an investor in one of them. For example, TRX and RightsTrade aggregate data from all of our systems, put them up in a combined ecosystem where buyers and sellers of all the studios and all the distributors are there right now, and they're starting to transform the way our business is conducted. So I do think that there's a future there. Because I think that the nature of those transactions, I don't think they can be completely automated, but I think a lot of the pre-work and post-work, in other words, screening the material, interact the same way you rent an Airbnb or something like that, a lot of that interaction can occur online, and it's happened to every industry. It will happen to our industry. When it happens, your guess is as good as mine, but I think there's a trend towards that. And I just want to, something about distributed technologies other than blockchain, I do think we're all taking advantage of those things in ways big and small. So things like, little things like contract revisioning and report queuing and things kind of like that. In the past, those used to take a long time. We acquired a system called Jaguar, which is a great system, but older technology. And a lot of things took a real long time. When we replatformed that stuff into just our modern tech stack and took advantage of the AWS features and things like that, we're able to basically offload a lot of this processing that used to be done in real time. It's still done in what I'll call near real time, but it just makes the user experience different, and it makes the accessibility of the data faster, which is what I think you're going to get also with these online marketplaces, where you can ask them the question, show me what sort of comedies are available for Brazil in the Portuguese language that I might be interested at my price point.
Okay, so I have to thank these guys for being up here. I've learned a lot, even just in the last half an hour. I think we may have time for one question. No. So if you do have questions, find me afterwards. Find any of the gentlemen up here. Thank you all for coming and listening. And what's up next?
Thanks so much, Nona. That was awesome. Platforms, more stars.